Hello and welcome to this CertSecurity.com podcast, Key Considerations When Buying an Anti-Malware Product. I'm Carrie Gattine, and it's great to have you with us. In this podcast, we're going to engage in some fact or fiction to dispel some common misconceptions about buying anti-malware products. Joining me today to divide the myths from the mantras is Diana Kelly, partner with Amherst, New Hampshire-based consulting firm Security Curve. Thanks for being here today, Diana.
Thanks, Kara.
Before we get started, I want to mention that this podcast is part of CERT Security's Intrusion Defense School, which you can visit at CertSecurity.com/NetSec. Before we begin, Diana, let's set the stage. Is buying an anti-malware product today really that much different than it was 3 or 4 years ago?
Well, I'd say yes and no. So in some ways, we've seen some of the same technologies in anti-malware for well over a decade. When you're looking at just signature-based detection, we've had this, we've been using this for years and years. So that's still in effect, and that's still part of, very much part of the antivirus and anti-malware landscape. However, things have been changing. We've got the rise of the mobile devices, the tablets and the phones where we want to put antivirus on there, want to protect against malware. We've also seen a change in what we're doing as we go online. So looking at the cloud and looking at trying to stop or protect our surfing in that environment. So it has changed, but there's still a lot that's the same.
Right. Okay, so let me tell our audience how this works. I'll read a statement, then Diana will tell me if that statement is fact or fiction, and then she'll explain why. So let's get started with the first one. Fact or fiction, it doesn't matter how an antivirus product is deployed because all products are transitioning to the cloud anyway.
That's a qualified fiction. I think that sometimes when we look at technology, it's really, you know, attractive to go ahead and say, oh, things have changed and we're all going to rip and replace. Looking at when we moved away from our old mainframes and old client server applications and we were going towards the web, there was a hope that we wouldn't have to keep our old mainframe or keep our old client server, but we still actually got a lot of legacy, and we've certainly got some legacy still in antivirus and anti-malware. And by legacy, one of the things I mean is having something on the host itself, an agent on the host, that's a security or an anti-malware protection agent. And that, while it's true that it's not necessarily going to be where we are in 10 years, we may actually transition to the cloud in 10 years for all of our protection. At this point, having something on the host is still very real. It still has a lot of reasoning and protection capabilities, because on the host you can see things about the activity that's unique to that device. And in the cloud you see the traffic going on and off, but you don't see all the activity in the internals in the device. So there's still very much reason to have something on the host. There's also arguments for perimeters and gateways that are still on-premise. For looking at traffic that you may not want out of your site, an example would be if you're using your anti-malware to look for outgoing traffic or somebody or some kind of command and control traffic that could actually have been taking some of your sensitive data and sending it out. Well, you might not want to send that out to a gateway in the cloud to have a provider parse it. You actually still might want to have a perimeter gateway looking at that data before it even goes off of your site. So the legacy still has a lot of important value and reason to it, although it is very true that we are getting more and more cloud protection technologies, and we're seeing advanced use of those.
Right, and 10 years is a long time in information technology. Very good advice.
It's like dog years, right?
Okay, here's the next one, fact or fiction. Support for multiple platforms has now become critical. Companies can no longer standardize on one platform.
Yeah, that's absolutely fact. Some companies may try and standardize on one or two, but really looking at how organizations are adopting use, we're seeing multiple platforms, heterogeneous environments. It's really not the time anymore where we could say we have one golden image for all of our Windows boxes, and that's really all that we're going to support. One of the big reasons for this is the trend in consumerization in IT, bring your own device, and those devices are coming into the corporate enterprise on multiple different platforms. So we've got Symbian, we've got Windows Mobile, we've got obviously Droid and iOS. So we've got other platforms that we have to deal with that are coming in BYOB. Even if you don't support BYOB now, to bring your own device, you may find that you're getting pressured by your users to, or even by your executives who want to use their iPads to get to your corporate mail. So even if you're not dealing with it yet, keep in mind that you probably are going to have to deal with the consumerization going forward. And internally with organizations, many are finding that still, again, that golden login isn't enough. There's more Unix on desktops and laptops, and we've got more use of the Mac OS. So definitely heterogeneous, and definitely that means that you need to get some way to protect all of those at a same baseline or bar rather than having different policies for the different platforms.
Hmm. All right, moving on, factor fiction number 3. An antivirus product should be able to manage all devices by a single console and be able to normalize policies across various platforms.
Yes, and again, qualified. I'm going to qualify that. It's a fact, but I'm going to qualify it because there's a little bit of pie in the sky in that fact. And as you noticed in the last question, I was talking about why we've got heterogeneous environments, what's pushing forward, and why we need to get some sort of a baseline or bar. And that's what this is really about. If we have one console that can normalize and manage across all of those platforms and all of those devices and all of those groups, then we start to be able to centralize and get better policy control, because what happens if we don't have the ability to centralize that policy and control is that we start to find weird pockets and holes around the organization. I actually talked to a company a few days ago that was struggling with its mobile strategy, and it turned out that they had different policies for the different platforms specifically because they didn't have technology that could manage all of them at the same level. So we absolutely want to get that normalized, get every system on a par, because the attackers are just going to look for the easiest way to get in. So if your CEO is using an iOS device to get corporate information and that's being stored on the device and that's the weak link, that's probably where the attacker is going to go. So it's not any good to kid yourself that, well, we'll worry about iOS later because we can't actually protect it. Make sure you've got that baseline before the deployment wherever possible. And one of the big control points there is getting that one console that can look across all your devices. The other big thing is not just with the different mobile platforms, but also bringing together your laptops and your mobile, because that's another disjoint in policy that's happening in a lot of companies. They have a very strong, robust anti-malware and protection policy for the laptops and the desktops, because we know these systems. We've been managing them for years. Then they've got a completely different policy for what they're doing on the mobile, and they're not bringing it together. So it comes time for audit, and the question is, how is this sensitive data being protected? And you've got great stories and proofs and reports on your desktop or your laptop side, not so much on the mobile side. So, again, trying to bring those together. Why would I qualify that? Because it's hard to find a solution that's really truly integrated across all the platforms and all of the solution types. So, a little qualified with that one. The other thing is that if you do have multiple different installations, you may not want to rip and replace and get one solution that can manage everything. So, again, the qualification there would be looking at some way to bring the information from the different control malware consoles for your different environments, for example, mobile versus the internal and the laptop, and either writing a way to bring those together yourself or looking at some other STEM console to bring that information. But yet, definitely look across everything or you're going to have mismatched policies.
All right, moving on to statement number 4. Fact or fiction, integrated reporting among multiple consoles or layered protection points isn't essential as long as the product can output for a SIM.
Yeah, and I would again say a qualified fiction there, because if we just say I'm going to just throw out everything that I have, all of the logs that I have from the different management consoles for my malware, for my different platforms, I'll just send that up to the SIM and let the SIM figure it out or the SIM figure it out. Not necessarily going to work. You may have to put a lot of different reports or customized number of reports on your SIM to get the data that you want. You may find that you need to do a lot of normalization work because of the different log formats or the different report formats or messaging formats coming from the systems. So, and you may find that you're slowing down your SIM, and that's not necessarily something that you want the SIM to do. The SIM is there in most organizations to give you those near real-time alerts when an incident is occurring. It's not necessarily there to do all of the normalization and management and control of your policies across your different platforms and devices for anti-malware. So it's possible that you could output everything to the SIM and do what you need to do from a reporting antivirus standpoint, but more than likely what you'd want to do is do most of the management and reporting within the antivirus, anti-malware protection environment, and send just those security events that you need to up to the SIM. You know, everybody's mileage is going to vary, but you know, in general, don't just assume we got a SIM, we got it covered.
Right. Very good. All right, Diana, moving on to statement number 5, fact or fiction. An antivirus product should go beyond traditional signature-based approaches to prevent infection from emerging attack vectors.
Yes, that's a fact. Absolutely. And I'm not, again, I don't want to say let's throw all the past out because we're moving forward. Signature-based searching, you know, with traditional grep of the data coming in and the bits and bytes coming into your system and off of your system, we can still actually parse this information, parse them with data signatures, and find some important footprints that indicate that we've got malicious code. However, we certainly have a lot of other ways to now look for what's going on with that system that could indicate that there's a problem. So we can use heuristics, we can use behavioral analysis, and I'm not talking some of the old pie in the sky. We automatically know if something looks unusual, because some of the old behavioral analysis, there's been a lot of fatigue in the industry because there were more promises than delivery. But we're now seeing that analysis looking for very specific kinds of information that really do indicate that there's malicious activity. So looking at very large amounts of protected data going out, very rapid emailing, for example. So if everybody in your email book, address book is getting mailed to, that could be an indicator. Although keep in mind that the viruses and the attackers the attackers that write the viruses are smart enough to know to do some of their attacks low and slow. So rate limit does have its limit too. But some other things that you can look behaviorally are command and control kinds of information. So if you've got an agent, a bot type agent or a malware agent on your system, it's not going to be that useful to the attacker unless the attacker can talk to it. So they actually create heartbeats too. And those kinds of communications can be really indicative, and we can see how they're working and get a good idea if there's actually malware. Another really good point that's beyond the signature are looking at execution in protected environments. And again, this is something that's been around for a while, but we've gotten a lot better and a lot more mature with how to do it. So you either sandbox locally on the host to execute a particular piece of code to see if it's malicious, or there are some systems that take them off the network, put it into a virtual environment, execute the code there, see what happens, and look for if there's malicious activity in this safe sandboxed environment. So a lot of ways that we can start to see more information about whether or not there's malware well beyond signature. Signature's still good, but you really need to look at some of these others, these heuristics, the ability to execute in a sandbox or safe environment to give us a much better picture of what's really happening from a malware perspective.
Interesting. All right, and finally, topping our list, fact or fiction. Support for other security features like host-based firewalling, privilege escalation protection, and DLP is overhyped and not essential because it's unnecessary and slows down performance.
So, again, I would say a qualified fiction there, because really when we're trying to protect our systems and our data and our information, we need to look at a number of different layers and a number of different approaches. So anti-malware and antivirus are part of the fabric of that protection, protection environment. So when you're looking at something like, you know, host-based firewalling, actually a lot of the agents now have that specifically written in. And DLP too, being able to look at what's going off of this particular system before it even gets off of the host to see if there's a way that you can stop it. Definitely they are other components to perform protection, just like signature-based isn't going to do it all for anti-malware. Just even looking for anti-malware, anti-spyware may not do it all. We may also need to deploy some DLP-type technologies on the host and possibly integrate it as well as firewalling or privilege use escalation. So they have a purpose within the anti-malware space and certainly within the protection space. But the reason to qualify that is that it is true that the more inspection and the more correlation that you're trying to do with any engine, that the longer, the more processing power that's going to take. So it is possible that you could have a slowdown. So where might you not want to do this? Where your processing power is at a complete premium all the time, specifically a database. You know, that's any database admins out there, folks that work with them, know what I'm talking about. I mean, that's you know all of your power is at a huge premium. On your host, you may have a little bit of extra processing power. In a small environment, a small business, small or medium business, you may be able to do more of the UTM, Unified Threat Management, which includes things like DLP in addition to firewalling on a perimeter gateway. So you may have the ability to do that because you don't have as much traffic as you might have in a bigger company, where what you'd want to do is you'd separate those functions, at least in terms of which system is doing it. So you have a firewall doing its good. Is that port open or closed? Is that protocol allowed or not? And then some of the deeper packet content inspection, you might actually offload off your firewall, even if it is a next generation firewall. You might want to offload it to a gateway that's more focused on the malware or the DLP, and then ultimately bring that again together in some sort of a STEM console, whether it's a anti-malware. In this case, you'd probably want to have those events going up to a SIM console from those different features and functions. So, again, you know, not necessarily don't do it because it'll slow things down, but certainly do keep in mind that doing more content inspection will take more processing power.
Thanks so much for your insight today, Diana. I hope we dispelled some anti-malware misconceptions for our listeners today.
Thank you, and I hope people found this useful.
To view the webcast presentation and article and quiz that accompany Diana's Intrusion Defense School, visit searchsecurity.com/netsec. And we have many more information security podcasts on our podcast page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. Thanks for joining us. I'm Kara Gatine. Have a great day.